It is the very last day of October, the 31st of our fall festival. It is quite foggy and pretty snowy outside. We usually get our first snow in October, but last year we got it really late. I think we got our first snow last year really late. If I remember right, it was later. November, yeah. Last year?
It was September 8th, right? Because yeah. That's when our neighbors came. They keep talking about it.
Do we have one and then have a big space? Big space, yeah. Well, anyway, it's looking like something may happen today for sure. And if not, it's going to be a good night to go around in a costume and a fog. Very Halloween-y. We are on Isaiah 23. And that's a good idea. We're reading each other's minds. This is basically the last one of all these things we've been doing for so long. What have we been doing for so long? We've been going through oracles or prophecies or judgments concerning all these countries around Jerusalem. And we've been through, like, I don't know, 10, 20 chapters of this stuff. So there's a lot of it. But every time we see what's happening with those particular people, whether it's Egypt or Ethiopia or Samaria or whatever it is, then we end up with information that not only applies to that time, but applies to our time. I think that if I was going to put like a sort of a fine analytical edge on it, I would say, you know, you remember in Revelation where Jesus sends letters to seven churches, and the seven churches all have different attributes and different histories, and they've got pluses and minuses, and some of the churches, not many, but one or two churches have no good things. One or two churches have no bad things. Most of them have good and bad. And they're specific churches with specific things going on. But the point of it, one of the points of it, is to look at your church in the modern day and go, where are we at? Or which one of these are we? Which parts of these do we have? You know, do we need to increase our Philadelphia-ness, you know, and decrease our whatever, you know, Thyatira-ness or whatever? I mean, you know, do we need to look at that? But I think that this is kind of similar, because as we know, for starters, there's been a lot of reflectivity between Isaiah and Revelation. And I don't think this is exactly the same thing, but what it is a list of these places, just like in Revelation. And each of these places has things going on. Some things good, some things bad, mostly bad, but a lot of different stuff. And then things that are going to happen to them, you know. So there is a really interesting sort of correlation, I guess, between this. Now, the thing that was interesting last time is that we got to Jerusalem itself. What is supposed to happen in Jerusalem? And then the archaeological one, you know, you remember it was talking about the two figures. And I was mentioning a lot of the prophetic sort of poetic nature of that. Those people are also real people. So we have this whole tradition within all the Bible of having a story about someone who's specifically real, but also having that become a metaphor. It's like talking about Napoleon and talking about what Napoleon did, but it ends up turning into a discussion of that type of leadership. You know, that kind of thing. We have that throughout the Bible. And last time we had this discussion, and you see these figures multiple times in the Bible. It's Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and there was a servant that had built the tomb and all that stuff, right? Shebna. That was last time. And I really found some depth to the spiritual sort of prophetic nature of that. But okay. It's also an actual story.
We're going to see them again in Isaiah.
Yeah, so we see them again in Isaiah. They're also over in, I think, Kings and Chronicles.
Yeah.
But this right here in the Archaeology Bible is a steward's house where a steward had built a big house out of stone. They're relatively sure that's the guy. Which is pretty cool, the fact that we would have that. And that's one thing that people don't realize. All you got to do, if you have a whole bunch of money and atheist friends, all you have to do is take them to the Holy Land. Because when they're looking at the actual tombs and they're walking around in the actual places, it's hard to go, this doesn't exist. This is a made-up story. You know, you're like, it's a made-up story. And then you look at the field of Armageddon, and you're like, oh, maybe it's not a made-up story. That would be the... You know, one of the things I would recommend, if you have a ton of money, let's just take all of atheist friends to the Holy Land. It'll be okay. But anyway, when I'm describing, Christianity to people who don't believe, I usually talk about it in terms of Paris. I use the Eiffel Tower. I tell them a story. I say, just imagine that I've been to Paris and I've seen the Eiffel Tower, right? You have heard of that, but don't really think it's real. Okay. And I tell you, no, seriously, I've been there. Paris is real. The Eiffel Tower is real. I went up the elevator, sit on the observation deck, looked at Paris, big old girders, crazy pigeons that steal your hot dogs. It's real. You know, it's going to be very hard for them to say, no, it's not, to my face, because I've been there. I mean, like, if I heard God say, hey, don't walk out on the street, and I stopped, and then a big runaway truck went in front of me, and I went, okay, thank you. And that was a clear experience for me, and there were 20 of them, or 150 of them. I'd be kind of a moron to ignore that, you know? I don't really consider that faith. I have faith in things, but I don't really consider that, like, a lot of that to be faith. Because for me, it's been so in my face. It's like, do I have faith in gravity? Well, I'm not floating. So pretty much. I'm not flying off the planet at a very high rate of speed. So something's holding me down. I'm going to call it gravity. Right? So that kind of approach... You know, and so this type of thing where they find the actual steward's tomb in the area that's supposed to be in, they found a house recently, this is like a week ago, right around the time of Isaiah, and they found a bathroom area. And I was just sitting there reading this article thinking, they may have found Isaiah's toilet. That would be pretty crazy. But they actually may have found Isaiah's. And I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. Anyway, that kind of stuff blows my mind. The reason I mention all this stuff from last week, not only is there cross-referencing about those characters and all that stuff, but for some reason they go back. So now we go from this place, this place, this place, this place, this place to Jerusalem. And I would think that that's where that would end, right? Because then in 24, you go to the whole planet, right? And then you go to the Messiah and all this other kind of stuff, right? Very cool stuff coming up. God is swallowing up death forever and all this other stuff. Why then do we take this little hiccup back to Tyre and Sidon? And that's an interesting concept. Why? And... you're going to get a bunch of similar stuff to what we had in all the other country discussions, but it's coming after stuff about Jerusalem. Now, the reason I mention that is because there's a reason. Everything about the Bible, every word, every location, every positioning, every phrasing, there's a reason. So what's going on? And either it means it's more important than Jerusalem, Or it's later, or maybe all those other things are much more ancient and this is much more modern or something like that. But there's got to be a reason. So where is Tyre and Sidon in the first place? And what that is basically modern day Lebanon, basically. So it's north of where we're at, but not by much. And it is sort of a gateway to all the other stuff. So let me explain what I'm trying to say before we get into the text. The rest of the stuff, Samaria and Edom and Ethiopia and all that stuff is typically, so we've dealt with the north, east, which is where the enemies are coming from. That's where the Assyrian Empire is coming from. It's where Aram Damascus is coming from. It's where their own people are going to attack them from, right? That's the north and the east. We've dealt with those guys. Then we've dealt with the southeast, the central east, the south-south, the southwest. All these places we've dealt with are surrounding them, right? One of them is to the basically direct east, and one is to the basically direct west. The stuff that we looked at with Ethiopia and Egypt is all south, and a lot of it's kind of, you know, it's mostly just south, but it's kind of south and west. This one is northwest. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters for a whole bunch of reasons. And reason number one is, almost never in the whole Bible do we deal with anything to the northwest. Okay, follow along what I'm saying. We deal with Egypt all the time. People are coming and going from Egypt all the time. We deal with the Sinai all the way through the whole all of Exodus and all that stuff. We deal with the Holy Land all the time. That's the main focus. When we travel out of there, Abraham's looking for wives, or his kids are looking for wives. We're going across the Fertile Crescent to the north and east. He's from the Far East, you know, in quotes, Far East, not Japan, but you know what I mean, Mesopotamia. Babylon, Assyria, Persians, all from the east. This area would be considered the west. In fact, the far west, because it hits the ocean, and nothing happens after the ocean in the Bible. I mean, the furthest thing that we get is Paul talking about wanting to go, you know, into Western Europe at some point, but he never makes it, right? So everything is this area here, and then this area here, and nothing's here. What is that? And when do we hear about it? Well, what it is when you head out of Jerusalem and you go north, one of your first things you do is deal with Samaria, which we've talked about some. But then you're going to arrive in a little area called Galilee in the far north, and that's kind of going to be important. That's going to be the focus of Jesus' ministry. Then they're going to leave out of there, and everything that happens ever again is northwest. Nothing ever happens to the northwest ever until Acts, and then nothing but the northwest happens, because the northwest is the way to modern day Turkey, to Greece, to Europe, and the world. The world is getting Christianity through the gateway of the northwest, not through anything else. The rest of this discussion is going to end up being Arabic countries, Muslim countries, could end up being African countries that don't have a large impact on the world anymore. They did for many, many years, but not after this. The impact is going to come through everything northwest. Maybe this is why, or one of the reasons why, we get Jerusalem and then this. Because this is kind of how we get Jesus, right? We get So we get ancient Hebrew religion, right? We get that from a guy that starts in Mesopotamia, in the southern part of Mesopotamia, and travels all the way around. And then God makes a deal with him about the Holy Land. He goes into Egypt. Then eventually his grandkids go into Egypt, right? And then they're in Egypt forever. Then they come out. Then they deal with the Holy Land. Then a bunch of them invade. They take over. They make a kingdom. They have judges and they have kings. Then they go through all this. Then that gets taken out. Then they have these battles with all these kingdoms to the east. Eventually they get taken. The top gets taken. Then the bottom gets taken. Jerusalem gets destroyed. Then they're over there. And Daniel's in the lion's den. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then Cyrus the Great comes along. And Persians take over. And he's like, why are you guys here? Go home. And he sends them home. And they go home. And they rebuild the temple. And it goes quiet for a few hundred years. And then a crazy guy in the desert starts eating honey and grubs and whatever he can get his hands on. And John the Baptist starts talking about this guy. And then there he is. Right. That's a really quick summary. So, right. I mean, and then so every single thing is about everything else but the Northeast. Nobody ever talks about that. But as we move out of Jerusalem and we head north, we head into Jesus land. There's got to be a reason for that. And then Jesus traveling back and forth, going through Samaria, because Samaria is between, if you go a certain direction, between Galilee and Jerusalem, right? You see what I'm saying? We're growing in that direction. So maybe the fact that this is after Jerusalem is the story, because that's exactly what happened. Everything was here, then everything was here, then everything went here. Maybe that's the order it's in, which would be amazing if that was true, because then you'd be having that order in the 8th century BC before anything, 800 or 900 years before that order existed, you would have that being spoken, which is exactly what Isaiah does. So, but let's see what it actually talks about. It says, the oracle concerning Tyre, and it says, "Wail, O ships of Tarshish." So, let's stop right there. What is Tarshish? So we've got a thing going on called the Phoenicians. And the Phoenicians, I mean, there's so many things that are going to happen in this area in the future. Not a lot has happened when we're sitting here in Isaiah. But so many things are going to happen. The city of Tyre is the city that I tell everybody about when I teach about Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great is going around conquering everything. He has a really good reason, he thinks. I think this whole entire story is just amazing. And this is all taking place between the two books. So this is interesting. What happens between the two books of the Bible is crazy. It's the primary secular history that happens. This is so weird. The Old Testament, the entire Hellenization and Alexander story, and the foundation of Rome, New Testament. So the foundation of the entire modern secular world happens between the two books of the Bible. That's really crazy to me. But in this Alexander the Great thing, he's going to be going down. And the quick story is this. He's marching along. Most people are just giving up. He doesn't do a whole lot of fight. He does a lot of fighting, but he doesn't do as much fighting as he should have done. Because as he shows up, most places, they just give up. He rolls into Egypt, and they're just like, here you go. Here's the keys. Right? Most people are smarter than fighting Alexander. He's got this crazy modern technology at the time, this phalanx system. It's like 300, except there's 30,000 of them. So you just don't do that. But he gets to this, he's going along the coast and he sees this island city, which is called Tyre. And they're this big walled city on this island, and they feel invincible because they've been through a lot of battles and a lot of wars, and they've basically been a very famous city for a really long time. We're about to talk about them in Isaiah, right? And so they've been a really famous city for a really long time. And he sends an emissary to them and says, hey, I'm Alexander the Great. What's up, y'all? Go ahead and give up. It'll be all good. Y'all can keep doing your thing. Just give me some cash. Right? That's what happened most places. He let them stay in charge. So it wasn't even like a really big deal in a lot of places. A lot of places it was like mass slaughter. But in a lot of places it wasn't a really big deal. You know, like for instance, when he took Persia finally and he took Babylon, right? This is the end. Alexander the Great is also the end of everything that we've studied. So that's a fascinating concept. We've been studying all these empires and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and all this stuff, and Alexander the Great ends all of that. So after that, it's the Hellenized world, and then it's the Roman world, and then it's the modern world. But there's a little bit of Dark Ages in there. But anyway, the point of all that is, he's rolling along, he gets to the city, he sends an emissary, and they kill a guy. They throw him off the walls. He's like, come on, guys. Don't make me do this to you. They're like, you can't do anything to us. We're an island. You don't have ships. You're walking around. What are you supposed to do with your big brass armor and all your spears when you're over there on the beach and we're over here on the castle wall? He says, well, then I guess I just make that the land. Like, huh? It's like, you guys don't get the whole great part, huh? You got Alexander, you figure that's a name, but you don't get the whole great part. I get it. All right, everybody get rocks. We're going to build a bridge. So it's had the whole army grab rocks, and they just make a bridge. They just put the land out to where the island is. And they're just watching this going like, excuse us, but we're an island? Yeah, he's like, not anymore. And they're like, but what now? He kills everything. He kills every man, woman, every child, every dog, every bug, every bird, everything. Every cockroach is stomped on purpose so that everybody knows what happens when you F with Alexander the Great, right? So then he shows up in Egypt like, here's the keys. We don't want none of that. We don't want none of that. Don't kill any bugs. We're good. We are good. We had a few centuries ago the whole plague thing. We're not doing this again. So anyway, but that's Tyre, and we're talking about that now. It's just hilarious. So that's a big major city, and it's an island. It's right off the coast of what would be modern day. If you went north of Israel right now, you would go into this whole area that would contain these cities. And Tarshish is interesting because, of course, if you look at that, you're like, okay, Tarshish could mean three or four different things, but what most people think it means is Tartessus in Spain, right? Spain? Okay, so don't forget the Mediterranean is all connected and has been for 1,000 years. Paul knows about Spain, and he might not call it Spain. I don't know what they call it. Paul knows. I think if Paul would have gotten 50 more years, he would have probably made it to Ireland, right? Or at least to France. But it's all interconnected. And by the time we get to the Romans have stuff all the way out in Ireland, all the way over. Basically, the world as we know it is known from Ireland to China, basically. So, but this is before that. But there's still knowledge of all these things. And one of these things is Phoenicians, and this is the ships of Tarshish. And Cyprus is this big island. Sidon's another Phoenician port. It's 35 miles north of Tyre. So these are ports. Island, coastal city, port cities. And in these ports, we're dealing with the rest of the world. So everything we've had so far is on the ground. It's Jerusalem. It's the areas to the east, the areas to the west, the areas to the south. It's on the ground. Now, the furthest thing away we've talked about is Babylon, probably, right? And that's basically sort of southeast a long distance, mostly east. But this is a whole different description. We're talking about foreign powers that we don't talk about almost ever in the Bible. Like, for instance, you have this coastal grouping of cities containing these guys that have some giants in their group that David has to deal with and Solomon has to deal with, and then a future kings of different parts of Israel and Judah have to deal with. And these guys are from where? They're not Canaanites. They're not Egyptian. So when you talk about Goliath or Gath or Ashdod or any of those things, you're talking about guys coming from somewhere else. And where they're coming from is islands. Remember, Pastor Todd a long time ago was giving a talk about that, David and Goliath. He was talking about Goliath's people, and they worship this sort of monstrous sea creature thing. And it's because they're from the sea. They're sea people. And in the Egyptian reliefs talking about them, they're called the sea people. So we're dealing now with something that we haven't dealt with a lot, which is people coming from further away and their coastal cities. So that's going to be an interesting thing. So let's just get into this. Okay. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is laid waste without house or harbor from the land of Cyprus. It is revealed to them. Be still, all inhabitants of the coast. The merchants of Sidon who crossed the sea have filled you. And on many waters, your revenue was grain of Shihor, the harvest of the Nile. You are the merchant of nations. Okay. So we're talking about, we're 23. We're Isaiah 23. We're talking about seafaring merchant people and their capital cities and where they're coming from. And this is a shift in gears from all the other stuff we've been talking about. That may be why it's in this position. But they're the merchant of the nations. That's important because this is going to lead us in the direction of going out into the world, almost like what Paul's going to do. But Tyre, it talks about, in this particular one, it talks about Tyre being 2,000 feet offshore, surrounded by heavy walls, and then Alexander builds the causeway in 332 BC and overpowers it. So Canaanite culture, and the Phoenicians are going to carry on a lot of the Canaanite culture. So this is why this is all connected. Be ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have neither labored nor given birth. I have neither reared young men nor brought up young women. When the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. Cross over to Tarshish, wail, all inhabitants of the coast. Is this your exultant city, whose origin is from days of old, whose feet carried her to settle far away? Who has purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants were princes, whose traders were the honored of the earth? So we have a question. Everything's about to fall apart for Tyre and Sidon, right? They're going to be completely destroyed. This is going to happen several times. But but the question is, why? And the answer is in 23:9. The Lord of hosts has purposed it, to defile the pompous pride of all glory, to dishonor all the honored of the earth. In other words, you are so full of yourself, and this is the problem with almost all the empires and kingdoms we've been dealing with. They're full of themselves. And this is the problem with the current people of God in that time, and the current people of God in this time, okay? And especially in the Middle Ages. But all the times that you read this, you know, basically except for a few periods right after Jesus, there's going to be a time when this applies to somebody on earth, but specifically the people of God are going to get a warning. So you have this giant kingdom of Egypt going down in flames. You've got this giant kingdom of Ethiopia going down in flames. You've got whatever, Samaria, whatever it is. You know, Aram, Damascus, or Babylon. Babylon's the biggest, most powerful kingdom of all. Totally destroyed. Alexander, biggest kingdom of all, totally destroyed. Rome, biggest kingdom of all, totally destroyed. America, biggest kingdom of all. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so you got to be careful. It's a warning. It's a series, a long series of warnings about what happens when you get full of yourself. When you think that you are, you know, the kings of the world. Maybe you are the kings of something. Maybe you are the greatest merchant princes. You know, it's like this. In my head, I envision this. Imagine a guy standing on a wall at the sea, okay? And with the finest clothes on. He's looking at this harbor that has a bunch of ships. And these ships are the finest ships in the world. Beautiful sails, beautiful ships. They're new. They're gilded. They're full of all these products. This guy is the richest man for thousands of miles in all directions. He's a merchant prince. And all these are his ships. And he's standing there. And he's thinking about how they're traveling all over the world and all the great things they're doing. But he's not giving credit to God. He doesn't understand that God is the one who gave him the money, the ships, the knowledge, the life, and everything else that he's got. And that's the primary problem with everything in the world forever, is that because it's a fallen world, people forget who gave them everything. These places are capitals of that thought process. It's the discussion of money and, you know, the discussion of mammon. Having money is not a problem. Worshiping money is a problem. And if you don't have a lot of money, it's probably because if you did have a lot of money, you would go sideways, right? A lot of people are like that, you know. And if you have a lot of money, hopefully you know what to do with it. I would like to hope that will have a whole bunch of money, and I would like to hope that I would use it in really awesome ways to help a lot of people. We don't know. God's in charge. But if I did have a bunch of giant ships, my thought process on that wall would be, thank God. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, Lord. I can't believe how blessed I am. Look at this stuff. This is amazing. This is all you. That's the process of a believer. The process of a non-believer is, I rock. Can you look at all my stuff? Now, God has to correct that. And the reason he has to correct that is because if all those people don't come to repentance and come to him, they end up in a pit later. Forever. So he needs to give them all a chance. And one of the ways to give them all a chance is to break all that down and get them thinking and praying, trying to figure out about life. So that's what's happening to these merchant princes. And he's dishonoring the honored because he's trying to get them to get their head straight. Cross over your land like the Nile, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no restraint anymore. He has stretched out his hand over the sea. He has shaken the kingdoms. The Lord has given command concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. And he said, you will no more exalt, O oppressed virgin daughter of Sidon. Arise, cross over to Cyprus. Even there you will have no rest. Now, there's a lot of titles for God in the Bible, but This is a pretty fun section because it's talking about the sea. It says, back in 4, be ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea. And that's God. God is the stronghold of the sea. God is the sea. Which blows my mind. We don't get a lot of the sea because we're living in primarily desert country. Primarily, we don't get a whole lot of discussions of the sea. But when we do, it's all about God, right? The whole Jonah thing, you get a creature swallowing Jonah. He's living in the belly of whatever that thing is. There's a bunch of scientific, you know, propositions of what animals could do it. And there's actually several animals that could actually swallow people, and ways for them to actually live. But besides, of course, divine intervention, but there are actually possibilities on the planet. One guy sent this picture of a scuba diver with a giant whale shark, and the whale shark's mouth was about the size of this room right here, and the scuba diver was like in front of him like this, and you're like, oh, well, he could camp out in there. There's plenty of room. But anyway, and the thing's got to go up and breathe, so there's probably a way to figure this out. But anyway, that's another whole class. We can talk about the viability of Jonah, because it's definitely a possibility. Of course, God can do anything he wants and have a big oxygen pocket or whatever he wants as God. But anyway, whenever we hear about the sea, it's always something like that, like Jesus walking on it or calming the storm. Jesus has an obvious, immediate control of everything involving water. I'm not trying to say Jesus is Aquaman. That's not my point, but pretty close. I mean, he's throw your you know, net on the other side of the boat, and you're going to catch a whole bunch of fish, and they do. He's got command of fish. He's got command of the waters. He's got command of the wind. You know, everybody's freaking out because of the storm. He's like, why are you guys freaking out? Let me sleep. The storm goes away, you know. So every single time we see something involving bodies of water, it's definitely God-like. Like, God is definitely in charge of the water. And these guys are sitting on the water thinking they're in charge, which is hilarious. So imagine the ocean as a giant body of God, and it could just come take away your town at any minute, right? Or provide a highway to spread the gospel around the world, or whatever. But you're sitting right on top of that in a boat or on an island going, man, I am so cool. It takes a whole lot to stand in front of the ocean and think you're really cool, right? Even a normal person, like even a non-believer person, cannot really stand on the beach and look at the ocean and go, wow, I'm so big and awesome, unless they're just a moron. Is that the thing that gets me about it is what's hidden. So you look at the ocean and you see this massive expanse and it's flat. And if you think about how it drops off underneath and how it gets deeper and deeper, it's crazy. Which means that it's a really, really good metaphor for us when it comes to God. Because we're standing on the beach and we can do what? We can stay totally away from the water because, you know, we don't want to get wet. We can go down and get like our feet wet. We can go down a little further, maybe put on a bathing suit, like, and go a little bit further. We can get in there up to our waist. We get up there up to our neck in it. What happens when we get above that? We start to freak out because we can't feel the bottom, but we're okay. So what do we do then? We put on a snorkeling gear. I love snorkeling. Now we're snorkeling. And when we're snorkeling, we're looking at all this stuff. So we're seeing all these things down that we can't normally see. We're sitting there on top, and we can't see any of that. Now we get this goggles on. Now we can suddenly see the reef and all the fish, which is totally cool. Then we can go deeper. Now we can get on a boat and go out there. Now we can get scuba gear on and go down into it. And we can go further out and get further down. Now we can get the most high-tech devices in the world and go really far down. Here's what we can never do. Get all the way down. Know everything. But we can go deeper and deeper and deeper. So what a great metaphor for our belief system. What a great metaphor for God. The ocean's going nowhere. The ocean's not changing. It's not going anywhere. We're standing on the beach. It's on us. We can get as wet as we want. We can go as deep as we want. It's on us. A lot of Christians have their toes wet. A lot of Christians are waist deep. Some Christians are out there floating going, I'm good. You know? Somebody is right now deep in the Word every day, and what they're doing is building a submarine. They're going deep. They're going to go down into the Mariana Trench as far as they can go. That's Pastor Todd's goal in life. the Mariana Trench. I'm going as deep as I could possibly go. Right? And but most of us are playing on the beach. I mean, what a great metaphor, the ocean. And you can't see anything. You got to dive into it to see. So this is all about the whole spiritual realm, the whole world of wisdom. It's all about what you can see and understand about the world. You have to go in and dive into it and dig down into it to get it, to get even a little bit of it. You don't want to miss the Great Barrier Reef, you guys, just because you're sitting on top with a Mai Tai. I'm not mad at Mai Tais. Big fan of Mai Tais and boats. But sooner or later, you got to go down and look under the water and see that reef and see how big and crazy everything is under the water. Anyway, I love this whole concept. But so I love God as the description of God as the sea and the stronghold of the sea. So now, but behold, the land of the Chaldeans. This is 13. This is the people that was not. Assyria destined it for wild beasts. They erected their siege towers. They stripped their palaces bare. They made her a ruin. Okay, the Chaldeans. So we know the word Chaldea, right? We know a little bit about the Chaldeans.
So is that the center of Babylon?
Right. So the Babylon rose a long time ago with Hammurabi and all that. Then it fell and was destroyed, eventually completely dominated by the Assyrians. The Assyrians are the ones that are the current problem, but they will rise again, right? Assyrian has decimated Babylon, but they're going to come back around the side, and it's not going to be pretty. So now, why did we suddenly shift gears? We're in the far northwest, and we just shifted gears to the far southeast. So just keep that in your head. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is laid waste. In that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. At the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre, as in the song of the prostitute, my goodness. The song of the prostitute. Take a harp, go about the city, O forgotten prostitute. Make sweet melodies, sing many songs that you may be remembered. Okay, my goodness. All right, so going back to this, and I just want to see what it says in this. This is a... This is the NSV, and this is the New King James. Harlot. Same thing. Okay. Now, first of all, anytime you see the phrase, we've been talking about this for months. Anytime you see the phrase, in that day, right, you need to pause for a second and get your spectacles on. Because you're probably not just talking about what's going to happen right now or in the near future. You're probably talking about something in the long term, right? In that day, typically relates either immediately or in some way to the day of the Lord, to the future, to Revelation. In that day. It could mean as simply in that day, right? Like next month. But normally that phrasing is a warning that tells us, we may be talking about something bigger. And how would we back that up, that idea? How would we back that idea up? If there was something that came immediately after it that was directly related to Revelation. So far, we've seen that half a dozen times, right? They'll say, in that day, blah, blah, blah. And suddenly you realize you're not talking about only this thing. You're talking about something big coming, right? And what do we talk about right after that? The harlot. What did we talk about right before that? The Chaldeans. What did you just say about that? What did you just say about the Chaldeans? Everybody's looking at him. He's like staring at the thing. You okay?
Yep.
What did you just say about Chaldeans a second ago?
Oh, Babylonian.
Right. So we got a mention of Chaldeans out of nowhere. We got a mention of Chaldeans. Then a song from a prostitute. A story about a harlot. Does that remind anybody of anything? That's the story of Revelation. Babylon is a harlot. Babylon's riding on a beast, remember? Babylon is thrown down and destroyed, and there's wailing on the people. The people are wailing because Babylon has been destroyed, but there's rejoicing in heaven. I think that this is all real specific. We're doing this whole story about Tyre and Sidon. Everything's going fine. And then Chaldeans, that's a completely different part of the world. Why are we talking about Chaldeans? Oh, because they're singing the song of the harlot. Okay, pulling it all together. So what are Tyre and Sidon in the story? They are the merchants of the world. That's the money system of the world. Okay? What do we need to do in Revelation? To take the mark of the beast in order to trade. So trade and merchants are a focus in Revelation. Then we have the Babylonians mentioned. And Babylonians, and it's in code. You got to know what Chaldeans are, right? So you broke the code, right? That's Babylon. Then what are they doing? But what are the people in Tyre and Sidon doing? They're singing the song of the harlot. First of all, when you hear anything that crazy, like singing the song of the harlot, just pump the brakes and try to figure out what's going on, because people just don't say stuff like they're singing the song of the harlot. Okay. What the heck even is this, that, right? What does that mean? And it says, they're singing the song of the harlot. Take a harp, go about the city, O forgotten prostitute, make sweet melody, sing many songs that you will be remembered. Okay. What? First of all, 70 years. Okay, a whole bunch of stuff. Babylon taken away, a whole bunch of stuff. But 70 years is one thing. But this is bigger than that as well. This is the song of the harlot. I think that in general, the world, in general, is singing the song of the harlot. Now, what is the song? What is a harlot? I mean, everybody knows what a prostitute is, but think about what a prostitute is, what a prostitute represents. A prostitute represents sex for money. Okay, what is sex? Well, sex is procreation. What's procreation? Having kids. Well, what's that? The single most important thing on the planet. It's the only thing that matters. It's Adam and Eve's thing. It's what humans were designed to do in Genesis, go forth and multiply and populate the earth. What's the only thing you can really do? You can build something, right? But then they'll break it down. You can make a company, but then it can go bankrupt. What's the only thing you can actually do? The only thing you can actually do is make other people. That's really it. Now, if you don't make other people, okay, whatever, that's fine. But the only thing we can really do is make other people. And they go on and hopefully do stuff, right? It's like Abraham. You're being blessed for generations. Your people. Abraham himself is in the story, but he's sort of irrelevant. It's your people that are going to be like the stars in the sky. It's your people that are going to bring a blessing to all the nations of the earth. Right? So think about that. So the most important thing is traded for money. So what a prostitute is not just that girl on the corner that's sad and needs meth. Okay? A prostitute is a representation of a violation of the two biggest things that we have in our lives, which is our money and finances and trying to survive on this planet, and sex and procreation and marriage. It's like a representation of a violation of everything important. So it just represents the violation of that. And there's a song, but look at what the song says. It says, go sing the song because you are what? You're a forgotten harlot. So this is a city. or people that were basically in modern parlance, it's like saying these people were all whores, right? They were all out there selling themselves and making money, and it was all about the money, and no matter what you have to sell to get it, no matter what you have to do to get it, no matter how horrible and weird that thing is. But they were destroyed. So they're forgotten. And now they're going around singing a song, trying to get people to remember how awesome it was. So this is a reminiscence of their forgotten glory as a harlot, which is not really glory, right? So to finish up, and it shall be at the end of the 7 years that the Lord will deal with Tyre. She will return to her hire and commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. Her gain and her pay will be set apart for the Lord's. It will not be treasured nor laid up, for her gain will be for those who dwell before the Lord to eat sufficiently and for fine clothing. Now, that's the way we finish this. It shall be that the Lord will deal with Tyre. She will return to her hire and commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. First of all, Tyre is a little town, like a little city, and it's a really big planet. So when you get terminology like she will commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the earth, we're not speaking about actual Tyre. Tyre is going to commit fornication with a lot of places on the planet. They're going to do everything they can to make money and be this capital of the world and all these merchants and kings and all that stuff. But this connects to the Revelations connection and the Babylonian harlot connection. So what we're talking about is the idea of Tyre and Sidon. So now, pulling back, looking at Isaiah, you've got all these different kingdoms and what they represent, right? Some of them represent power. Some of them represent the kingdoms of Africa. Some of them represent the kingdoms of Mesopotamia. All these different things. Tyre and Sidon are different. They come in a different position. They're after discussion of Jerusalem. They come in the position before discussing the whole planet. They're occupying the northwest, which is the gateway to spreading Christianity to the entire world. And they are representing the two things that kind of come up against the goodness of God, the righteousness of God, which is, you know, lust, sexual perversion, etc., and money and power, right? All the things that represent the problems of the world are represented in Tyre and Sidon, and God deals with them, but they rise again because they're going to be around until the very end. At the very end, the Babylonian harlot, which is basically the focus of the world on sex and money, in general terms, is going to end. It's going to end violently during the tribulation. And it's going to be part of all the things that happen in Revelation. So what we're tracking is not only the actual towns of Tyre and Sidon and all the stuff that happens to them, but they're becoming the representation of the merchants of the world. Not in a bad way. It's not bad if you have a shoe shop, okay? It's the focus of the merchants of the world. And the focus between merchants and prostitutes, it's the same thing, right? It's like soldiers and mercenaries. A soldier in the army is a person that's dedicated to protecting their country and their family. Or they can take that same skill set and go do it for money and shoot a bunch of people in Angola for cash, right? So that's what a prostitute is. You're taking the idea of the symbol of a prostitute. You're taking the idea of business, which is fine, right? It's all kinds of stories and parables about rich dad giving their kids, you know, different amounts of money and seeing what they do with it. I mean, financial security and the way to handle your finances is all through the Bible. It's not having a business or having money. It's what you're willing to do for it. What a prostitute's willing to do for money is anything. The only thing a person has really is their body that they can keep sacred. And they can't really do much. So just saying, hey, do anything you want for me for cash is a warping of all those concepts of your body as well as the idea of finances, business, everything else. It's the warping through the dark side into what that is. So that's what these merchant princes have become, which is basically whores. We're going to do whatever we want, and we're going to make the money that we want when we're in charge. And that idea is the core foundation of what's called Babylon throughout the Bible. And it's going to fall specifically several times, but permanently in Revelation. And that's sort of where we're at. We're at the discussion of how these guys are going to have what happens to them as Tyre, as Sidon, as these cities, what's going to happen to them. But that becomes a meaningful look at the future. This happens multiple times. It doesn't just happen right after this. It also happens from Alexander. It also happens later. It also happens from Rome. It also happens later. It also happens in the modern world. And eventually it happens completely and finally. So I think this representation, once again, of the idea of Babylon and the idea of the sort of merchants of the world is going to be feeding into the next section. Because in 24, we go very specifically into the far future, right? Into the end of the world kind of a situation, right? So I think that's why we have Jerusalem dealt with, and then we talk about this. I think that's why this positioning is like it is in 23, because it's going to take us in that direction of the whole world. Make sense? So let me see, where are we at? So now, next, we're not on Wednesday. Yeah, so we got Fusion coming up. We don't have any, like, really interruptions anymore because it's Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. We'll have to talk pretty soon about the holidays. Of course, Thanksgiving is just like a Thursday. You usually prep on Wednesday, so that won't affect us. We usually used to take Wednesday before Thanksgiving off because everybody had to make turkeys. But now we don't have to do that. So the only thing we probably have to do, take off, is probably going to be around Christmas or whatever. So we don't really have to miss many classes. So next week we can go into 24 and see how this idea of this fall of the merchants and sort of the prostitutes of the world is going to play out. We'll get a little more information next week. But that's fast. That's how it is now, 8:30, 9:30, bang, bang, bang. So let's pray. Wow. Lord, thank you so much for this day. That was so fast. We get into your word, and it's just impactful and wonderful, and the things we learn about you and from you and through you are just so important to us. It moves so fast sometimes. It's exciting. Thank you for these people, everybody that came today and everybody that wants to come and is not here. Please bless everyone and protect them as they drive around, especially if there's weather. Protect their health from all the different crazy things in the world, and protect their families and homes and their finances and their hearts and their families. Just protect them completely with your wonderful coat of armor. Give us the full armor. We love you so much. Thank you for this place to meet and this time together. We're so grateful. Continue to have your way with us, to touch our minds and hearts and guide us closer and closer to you all the time. We're so grateful and we love you so much. Bless the service today and the worship, and just show up and be present and touch people's hearts and deliver people, Lord, and give us opportunities to speak to people around us. We just want to, you know, stand for you in any way we can. And we just love you so much and thank you. We pray all these things in the mighty, unstoppable name of Jesus. Amen. Mm-hmm.